Hello, everyone. Welcome to a new episode from From Zero to In. Today, I'm with Mark Hertzberg. Mark has been a teacher on MIT for many years. He has been reading a new book called The Career Toolkit. And basically, we're going to talk about this book, about all the lessons that you can get from it and all the things that he have been learning. Well, not all the things, but some of the things that he have been learning on the past years as a MIT teacher and in the software industry. So yeah, Mark, can you introduce yourself to the audience? Like, what is like a short biography of yourself? Where are you located? What are your passions beside work? And what do you do for a living?
Certainly, that's quite a lot. So I'll try to condense it.
Sure.
I came out of MIT back in the 90s, back during the dot-com era. And I began as a software engineer. I got into startup companies, and I've spent most of my career building tech startups. So classic startup companies, the types of things that you read about in the papers, different companies in lots of different industries, from cybersecurity to labor markets, big data, all sorts of different areas. I've also helped a couple Fortune 500s who wanted to play startup, who wanted to create new innovative business units. I helped them launch that. Now, in parallel to this, I've had a second career. Because early in my career, I realized I wanted to become a CTO, a chief technology officer. And I realized that to get that job, it wasn't just about being the best engineer. Yes, I had to have good engineering skills, but there were all these other skills that I needed, but no one taught me. Skills like leadership, communication, team building, negotiating, important things I had heard of, but they were never in my education. So I began to upskill myself. And as I was doing so, I realized these skills are for everyone. They're not just for senior leaders. They're for everyone at all levels of the company. So I began to upskill other people on my team. And as I was doing so, MIT had done surveys asking companies, what are the skills you want to see? And they got a very similar list. Leadership, team building, communication, all the same things. And I said, well, we have to do something. We're not teaching it either. So MIT put together what's now known as the Career Success Accelerator Program. When I heard they were working on this, I reached out. I said, I've got some content I've developed for my team. I'm happy to give it to you. I thought that would be it. One and done. Here you go. Best of luck to you. Instead, the conversation led to them asking me to help create additional content for MIT and then to stay and help teach. So in addition to my primary career of building tech startups, I've had this parallel career teaching at MIT for the last 20 plus years. And more recently, I turned that into my speaking, my book, and my apps. So I've got these two parallel tracks. And now I live in New York City and split my time doing that, plus some volunteer work and a whole bunch of other stuff.
Well, that's great. And you know what? All these things that you are talking about are called soft skills, right? And those soft skills are very hard to get. That's kind of interesting, right? And then you just mentioned that those things are usually not teach at school, right? Because are things that you're supposed to get naturally, but it's not like that, right? You're some skills that you need to build over the time with experience.
Exactly. We've assumed that you just pick it up somehow by osmosis. And perhaps in the past, we used to give that to our children. Parents would pass it along, but that doesn't seem to be happening these days.
Yeah, exactly. And it's something that you can pick up from books from time to time. You can pick books that helps you with those soft skills, but it's something you need to practice as well. So it's good that you start learning about them so you can practice, the sooner the better, right? So this book, The Career Toolkit, it talks about how you need to build your career plan. So my question is, when is a good time for somebody to start thinking about building the career plan?
The answer is today. It is never too early to start. Now, if you're saying, I don't even know what I want to do, you might be in your teens, in college, maybe even early 20s, and you're not sure where you want to go. No problem. It begins with a series of questions. And we have these questions in chapter one. They're also available for free on the resources page of the website. You can download the questions and ask yourself, what do you think you might want to do? And that's not just, well, do I want to be a doctor or a software engineer? It's things like, how much travel do I want? Do I want a 9-to-5 type of job or something where I might be working evenings and weekends, but I also have flexibility during the day? How much time do I want to spend in meetings? Do I want to work by myself or with other people? There's a whole bunch of questions. It's not about, do you want this job or that job? but the nature of the job, the things that you enjoyed. Do you like working with spreadsheets or hate working with spreadsheets? And as you start to answer these questions, it gives you a sense of what you might want to do. Now, in parallel to answering these questions, talk to other people. Talk to people in different roles in different industries and ask them about their jobs. Ask what they like about it, what they don't like, what it's like day to day. And you can start to map saying, if I like to do XYZ, I like to work by myself on spreadsheets in a 9-to-5 job. Okay, well, now as I'm talking to people, who's telling me about a job that sounds like it has this type of work? And that's going to help you figure out a direction. Once you have a sense of the industry, the job you want to go into, think about what you might want down the road. I knew I wanted to become a CTO. Now, you can't just go from being a software engineer to being a CTO. You could in the 90s, but it wasn't the right way to do it. Back then, you could say, oh, hey, I'm doing a startup. I make myself CTO. Give myself a title. Didn't mean I knew what I was doing. And I recognized that, so I wanted to plan out how to get there. Consider, for example, if you want to run a team of 100 people and you've never managed anyone before, no one's going to trust you that you can just magically manage 100 people. Before you can manage 100, you should show that you can manage a team of 60, 70 people. Before you can do that, you should show you can run a team of 30, 40 people. And before that, maybe about 20 people and so on. So when you started with zero, you might start out by saying, my next step is to show that I can manage a team of 5 or 6 people. Now, it might be you take a job where you're literally managing and have authority over those people, or it might just be, well, I'm not officially in charge of them, but the nature of the job, and I'm kind of supervising these people. I might not have higher fire responsibility, but I'm supervising, I'm doing the project management. So when you go to that next job, you say, hey, look, I've done this. I can talk about it. I can show you what I did. And that puts you on the path. The key thing is not to think about going from here to this giant step way, way down the road. You need all those intermediary steps, and planning that out will help you get there instead of just saying, well, I hope I wind up somewhere in the future, but I don't know how I'm getting there. And now something simple you can do, because we said start today. Right now, I'm going to ask you to pause this podcast, come back as soon as we're done. I'm going to ask you to pause the podcast, pull out your cell phone, create an event on your calendar that says, think about my career, and set that as a recurring meeting for every 6 months. So you can pause the podcast and do that. And now that you're back, you've added that meeting to your calendar every 6 months. Now you have a check-in, you have a reminder to say, I have to think about my career, whether thinking about those questions or thinking about what are those next steps. Did I create my career plan? Am I on track, off track? Because just like our project plans, you need to do regular check-ins.
That's a very great idea, you know, because even when you already have a career, there is also a career plan for yourself that you need to keep sure that you are on the right track, right? So that's great advice. And when I was at high school, there was this kind of test that was helping you to decide where kind of school or career you should pick based on your interest. But none of the questions you described were in that test, because it was like, first of all, many years ago, and now with the remote work and all the new ways to do work, it's like your new question is like better, because it asks you what kind of work do you want to have. Compared with in the past, it was just interest, which it's just a part of it, right?
Well, this is another almost subtle problem. Let's think about medicine. We all know what a doctor does. In fact, even little kids, they get, because we've seen it on TV or you've been to the doctor's office. So doctors take care of people. And a lot of people go into medicine because they like the science or they like taking care of people. Okay, that seems pretty straightforward. What you don't see on TV, what you don't see as the patient, is all the paperwork a doctor has to do and filling out the forms and getting reimbursed. And if you're a doctor in private practice, which here in the US, many people are, that means you're running a small business. You have to do budgets. You have to market yourself. You have to hire people and manage staff. They don't teach you any of that in med school. There's all these other parts that aren't so obvious, and you might hate that. In fact, most doctors I know hate all of that. Even my own job as a CTO. Now, we know what a CTO does. CTO, well, you're in charge of people. You're dealing with strategy, coming up with a roadmap. You might speak to some customers. okay, well, I've been at companies where they would say, your job is to manage all the people. We're going to tell you what to do. And you just sit as the person in charge of all the engineers and make sure we get things done on time. We don't need you talking to customers. There's no reason for you to leave the office or be at a conference or any of that. So just sit there, heads down. Once in a blue moon, I might talk to a customer with a technical question they can't answer. I've been at other companies where I am on the road all the time because I'm speaking at conferences, I'm talking to customers, I'm building out our partnerships. Yes, I'm still project managing people, although at a certain point, I'll have directors and VPs under me to do some of the more day-to-day. The title's the same, the job description might be the same, but the actual amount of time I spend doing things, even how much time I spend in meetings, will vary greatly from one job to another. And if you like or hate meetings, one of these jobs might be a lot more fun or a lot more painful than the other, but it's not evident just from the job description.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, because at the end of the day, what you will end up doing is not exactly what is on the job description. It is exactly what you need to do once you are hired, right? Because that's the job description is just like a placeholder for somebody to go and apply, but it's not actually what they actually do, right? It's usually used more than that.
It usually is more, but even the things in the job description, there's a company where it says you need to manage the engineers. And that might involve 2 hours of meetings a week. It might mean you're doing 18 hours of meetings a week because you have a bigger engineering team, less middle management. You might be doing more meetings with other partners. Maybe they're a meeting heavy company. And a difference between 2 and 18 hours can really change your level of enjoyment with that job. The job description both says have meetings or manage people, but it doesn't get into the details of what that actually means.
Yeah. Yeah, and one of the things you mentioned at the beginning of when starting to build your career plan was the importance of asking other people what they do on their jobs. And there is this thing about having a mentor, which happens to be somebody that already have experience on the things you are interested in. And I would like to hear your idea about mentoring, because it's a recurring topic on this podcast where a lot of people do believe having a mentor is such a great idea, and not having is naive.
It is great to have a mentor. Now, keep in mind, you can, of course, just ask one-off questions. You can say, hey, can I just meet with you, grab some coffee? I just want to chat, get some ideas without having you formally as my mentor. It's just a one-off conversation. But a mentor is really helpful when you want to develop more strategically. And you want that longer term relationship where you can get some feedback from someone who knows you and gets to know you over time and can give you that guidance. Now, many people think the mentor should be someone in the role I want in the future. And certainly that is a good place to start, and you can get those people. But consider there are different reasons you might take someone as a mentor. One could be they're further down the path that you're going on. And by path, I mean career path, but could also be I want to get better at being a leader. And here's someone in a totally different industry, but she's further down the leadership path than I am. And she can teach me about leadership, even if she's not in my industry. So we might pick people who don't look exactly like us. And by that, I mean not in the same role or industry, but it's a path that we're interested in. So we can be a little more open-minded and broad, whether it's the career path or a particular skill set we want to get better on. If we can find someone who exhibits that, that person can, if they're kind enough to give us their time, be our mentor.
Yeah, and then that's a good point. I was always thinking on mentor is somebody on your same kind of career, but it's interesting that it can be different careers, but same kind of skill set that you're looking for.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and you have on your website like a summary of your book, the Career Toolkit, which I happen to went into detail. I haven't read the book yet, but I went into the topics, and there is one topic that it catch my mind, which is meta work. What is meta work? Because I kind of have an idea, but it's something I believe you explore deeper into the book.
When you think about our education, it was very structured. The teacher would say, I'm going to give you a problem and stick the answer in this little box. That's where you put it on the test and you get the right answer or the wrong answer. And that's how we were taught. The teacher gives us a question, we answer the question. At work, your boss is not so formal. Your boss doesn't say, here's everything you need to know. When you think back to problem sets, for example, in class, I was an engineering student, and a teacher would give you a bunch of lectures and say, here's a problem set. And guess what? Everything you needed to know about solving the problem set, you learned that week in class, or you got it from the book. You knew where to get the answers. Mm-hmm. Your boss doesn't do that. Your boss doesn't say, here's everything you need, now answer the question. Your boss says, here's a question, answer it. And he might not tell you everything you need to know. In fact, it might even be the wrong question. And your boss doesn't even know it's the wrong question. So we need to focus on what are the right questions. We need to focus on how we answer the question. We need to focus on how we convey those answers. Because again, there's no test where the boss says, put your answer in this box. Here's a very simple example that will illustrate it. I know that I'm the type of person who I'm not a morning person. In the morning, I'm barely functioning. So if you want to pitch me with a big idea, don't hit me up as I walk into the office at 9 in the morning and say, okay, Mark, hey, here's a great idea I had last night. This is what we should do. Go, slow down. I need to get my gears going. You want to hit me up in the afternoon. I'll even take a call in the evening over doing it in the morning. That's how I function. Knowing that about me, it means pitch your big ideas to me in the afternoons, not the mornings, because I'll be more receptive to it. Knowing things like how to manage your manager like this makes sense. Knowing whether when you have an idea or get your answer, do you deliver it in an email, in a PowerPoint, in a meeting? Do you walk into your boss's office? How formal or informal? These are the different aspects of work they never talk about in school. They just say, here's how to get the right answer. So there's a whole bunch of other aspects to work that we never talk about, but can really make you much more or much less effective in your job.
So if I understood correctly, so meta work is the kind of work that will help you to do your work better, but exactly. Is something that is not actually related to the actual task, but it is something around it.
It's the unwritten rules, which could be corporate politics, could be style of communication, could be figuring out what the actual work is you should be doing. All those things come into play.
That's interesting, because now that I think on it, it's like something that usually happens to everyone, right? So here is an example on the software engineering. We want to implement continuous integration delivery. Well, that's the question, right? Or the problem. But in order to answer that, there are thousands of tools that you need to assess and to understand to see which one is the best. So that's like kind of the meta word that you need to assess before actually answering the question.
Exactly. Or you might even say, hey, wait a second. We are a medical device company. And you, the CEO, said, I just read about continuous integration. Why aren't we doing this? We all know there's always some executive who says, here's what I read. Do it. Say, wait, we're medical device. We have to be really careful. Continuous integration into production is a really bad idea given how regulated we are. Maybe it can go into our dev environment or staging, but here's why that won't work. And so instead of just doing what the boss says, do what you think the boss means. Now, even then, you might have a boss who says, oh, hey, thank you for speaking up. I'm so glad you brought this up. You might have another boss who says, I know what I'm doing. I told you to do this. And if you're not doing exactly what I say, you don't belong here. Even knowing your boss's style and when to listen, when to do something not given, that matters. And that can lead to your success or failure at a job.
Yeah. And those also are soft skills. So those things that you are not teach at school. So there is this other things that you introduce within the career toolkit, which I found interesting, which are interview drills or kind of practice for an interview. And I believe those are amazing because when I had my first job interview, I didn't have any practice at all. So when I went, I was like, my self-esteem went down because I didn't have any idea, you know? And I believe something that schools need to pay attention to, like make those kind of drills.
They do, but I talk about an even more important piece that we ignore. Now, there's no shortage of content on the internet that will help you prepare for an interview. If you get the question, what are your weaknesses, for example, we can Google around, we can go find, how do I answer this question? And you should practice this, you should be prepared. but it's even worse when we do it as an interviewer, as the person at the company in the interview. Because we just say, oh, hey, why don't you go interview this candidate? I have no idea if you are even capable of doing that. If you've ever thought about, how do I interview this person? What do I look for? What questions do I ask? How do I assess this person? We just throw people in blindly and assume you can interview. The analogy I use, imagine if you said to a 16-year-old kid, hey, you're old enough to drive now. So here are the keys to the car. I know you've seen cars drive, right? You've seen there's a steering wheel, it turns. So yeah, just do what you've seen me do. Best of luck. It would be insanity to just hand over the keys to a 16-year-old and assume he could drive. We instead say, no, you have to have training. We're going to send you to driving school. But we do this with interviews. Oh, you've been interviewed before, right? You get how this works. Go interview someone else. It's equally insane. Instead, we need to train up our employees about how to think about interviewing. And so in the chapter, I talk a little about it from the candidate side, but then I also speak about it from the hiring manager side and how we need to prepare and be intentional with our hiring practices.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I have been doing job interviews, and I usually have a checklist of the things that we're looking for, like all the skills that we do believe are important for the role. And I am just throwing those questions. But honestly, I never had like a specialized training for job interviewing, you know? And I guess that's something that we should look for from now on, because as I say, it's just a checklist and then that's it. If the candidate like fulfill all those things, that seems it's a good candidate, but there will be more things that will be actually needed, right?
Now, what's on your checklist? Give me a couple of the items.
Yeah, there is, we are on the e-commerce side of it. So we are asking about e-commerce practice. And we are asking about Java development. We are asking about front-end development, software architecture. So basically, I do throw questions related to those areas, trying to understand their experience.
And which is the most important?
Java development is like the core of this platform.
And so it's most important if they're answering four categories of questions, how they do in the Java category is the most important out of the four. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you think everyone else on the team agrees with that and would put that as the most important? Would they put the second most important? Would everyone give the same answer there? Or is it possible you say, I love this candidate because she's really good at Java, maybe doesn't know much about e-commerce, and someone else is saying, oh, but she really gets e-commerce, and I think that's really important. Java is not quite as important. Is there agreement, not just on what you're asking, but even the weighting of these things?
That's a good question. No, there is not actually, because what I am thinking on, you can learn e-commerce because there is, I believe it's easier to learn e-commerce than learn Java. And maybe you can think differently. You can think backwards. You can say, well, learning Java is easy. There is a lot of Java developers out there. So e-commerce skills is kind of harder. So yeah, that's a good point.
Make sure everyone's in agreement about what you're looking for.
Yeah, exactly. That's good. And that's something I'll need to take a look now. And thanks for that. And then you also talk about leadership, and leadership is something very interesting because you need to be able to teach people with an example, right? And I am reading a book called The Lead That Has No Title. And basically it talks about anyone can be a leader. They just need to take the role, you know, they just need to do some principles and they will be leaders. And I find that very interesting. But there was a guy that saw the cover of the book and say that book is bullshit, because how a leader can have no title? Leaders need to have title and power. And I was not very deep into the book, so I didn't have an answer for that guy. But basically, the book tells you that you can be a leader without having the title. What do you think about that idea?
So here's the answer you can give him, because this is what you'll get in a single chapter in my book. You don't need a whole book for it. Authority needs a title. And authority is not leadership. Authority is the fact that, well, I'm the CTO and I get to decide who gets hired, who gets fired. I can do that. Now, I can be a terrible leader. I can not show up to work, not tell you what's going on. You could all think I'm terrible. But as long as I have the authority to decide, hey, you're fired. Okay, I have authority. I'm not a great leader, though. Leadership is about putting forth a vision and getting people to follow it. Now, it's not necessarily authority. In fact, let's think about who some of the greatest leaders are. Consider a man in the US like Martin Luther King. We think of him as a leader. He's a leader of the civil rights movement. He had no authority. He was not elected to office. He didn't have a formal role. He said, I have a dream. He had his vision and everyone said, I buy into that. I'm with you. If you say we need to march here, I will go and march here. Not because he commanded them, not because he threatened to fire them. He led them. And true leaders don't need authority. Now, often leaders are given authority, but you can lead without authority. When companies say they want leaders, what they mean is not just we need more people with some senior title. Oh, we need 40 vice presidents here. They're saying you with a junior title can stand up and say, hey, everyone, I have a vision for our future here. This is what we should do. Here's why. I want you to buy into this idea. That's what we're looking for. It has nothing to do with your title.
Yeah, that's very a smart question to say to that guy. Because basically, by default, you associate leadership with authority, right? With the kind of power that leads with a title. And basically, it's not like that. That's very interesting. And then there is this thing about being a leader and being a manager. Which are different stuff, right? Because you can be like a team lead, which happens to, as you say, lead the team to do the things that needs to be done. And then a manager, which is just trying to make sure things are made on time. So what are the differences between leadership and management? Because I believe that's kind of confusing as well.
It is very confusing. And so in my book, I've got three different chapters, one on leadership, one on the people side of management, and one on the process side of management. And I break it down this way. I'll put in a very scientific term that I think will resonate with your audience. I think of them as the unit vectors. These are the three unit vectors to running a team. Now, of course, what do we do in the real world? Our vectors aren't unit vectors. We, of course, compose them. And I end the section by saying, good managers lead, good leaders manage. So we can talk about them being different, but you're not going to say, okay, I'm going to lead for 5 minutes. Now 2 minutes of management, back to leading. Yeah. You just do. There's a lot of debate over where the line between leadership and management is. And we could literally spend hours talking about it. I'm going to give you two quotes that really, to me, sum up the essence. And the first is from Admiral Grace Hopper. She is famous. She's the person who coined the term bug. And what she said is, nobody ever managed men into battle. Now, that doesn't tell you what leadership is, but if you think about the quote, you start to get a feel for what leadership is and what it is not. But before you think, oh, okay, well, leadership, yeah, that's the important one. There's another famous quote, which is that an army marches on its stomach. Or the modern variant is, amateurs talk strategy. And I think, I forget the second half, but like the serious people talk logistics, because you can lead an army, you can inspire them, you can rah-rah, but if you can't get the logistics right, if you can't make sure the food and the gas and the weapon all get where they needed, your army's not doing anything. And so you don't think, oh, well, then leadership is the right thing to do from that first quote, because management is just as important.
Yeah, and our totally different things, but we usually think them as the same thing, you know, like project leader or project manager or whatever. Both those titles are usually like mixed. But when I was work on a project, I was usually asked as to be the leader, the lead developer, let's say. And my work was like to make sure that we all have nothing in like no roadblocks for us, you know? And then the project manager was just making sure that we were on time. And I was thinking, yeah, it's kind of the same, but different, but it's with this thing that you say, it's like both are different and both are equally important.
Yes. We're seeing some trends that certain companies are separating out into dual leaders of teams, a people leader and a process leader. I don't know if I agree with that yet, but it depends a lot on the dynamics of the company.
Okay. And other of the soft skills I believe we should all know or have is about public speaking. And I believe that is a soft skill that I did learn back in when I was teenager at church. I was my mom took me to the church, and there were some times where I need to talk about some subject in front of some guys, right? And that did help me to be able to speak up, right? And then when I started my career, I was working with other peers, and when we were on meetings, they were all shy and they didn't talk. Even when they have very good ideas, they were not able to speak them. So I believe public speaking is a soft skill we should try to get.
Absolutely. And now people think public speaking means I get up on the stage, I stand at the podium, I talk in front of a room of people. That is certainly public speaking. This right now is public speaking. It might be you and I talking, but we know there will be many people listening in the future. But public speaking is also sitting in the meeting with six of your coworkers and then for a moment saying, hey, here's an idea I have. Interviewing is a form of public speaking, even if there's only an audience of one. So we use these public speaking skills in all different areas. And really getting better at public speaking is important for how you communicate, even if you will never get up on that stage and stand at the podium. That's fine, but still develop your public speaking skills because you will be using them on a daily basis.
Exactly. And that's something that we should practice as much as possible, because if you don't do, you can end up in situations where, because of the lack of your public speaking, saying something out loud when it was needed, then you end up doing things that you didn't want to or you didn't agree to.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And then this thing about communication, you know, it's something that is very important regardless into the industry you belong into, because if something is wrong with it, communication, something can be wrong with like all over the place, right? So what do you think it's like a good practice for companies to encourage good communications?
Communications really underpins everything we do. There's a great book called PeopleWare by Tom DeMarco and Timothy Lister. It was written, I believe, 1981, but holds true today. And they said most software projects fail. They're late, they're over budget, they don't work as they're supposed to, but they fail not so much for technological reasons as sociological reasons. If you think about the work you do at this e-commerce company, I'm guessing you don't need a PhD to work there. I don't mean to be critical. It's just there's not some cutting edge, wow, this is really complex math. It's straightforward. How do we take this data over here, transform it, and stick it over there? Whether it's someone's shopping cart or records or telling the warehouse to ship, it's pretty straightforward. A 14-year-old could follow that flow. Why then do we have problems? Why are there mistakes? Why are there errors? Because we had a miscommunication, because somehow there was confusion, even though we all sat in the same meeting or read the same email. And really, it's that communication that comes down that trips us up. So, getting better at communication is going to reduce that friction, that cost of the miscommunications and misunderstanding and the wasted time and effort within our company.
Yeah, but here is the thing. How, well, I guess it's quite a complex to answer, but how can, as you just mentioned, right? E-commerce is an a simple example about this, right? But it can be any software. How do you make sure that the communication is well done? So there are like tools for software, like you know this Scrum methodology where you gather every single day and you communicate very often, but still there are problems with communication. So I assume that should be like some you know tips or something around for help you to build better communications.
Well, this, of course, is why I've got a couple chapters that cover it in my book. And there are many, many other books. So there's no, here's the silver bullet to do it. But look at your communication, how you communicate from when and how you do it to even my chapter, I get into how you convey the ideas, how you phrase it, how you explain it. For example, I used this concept of unit vectors when we talked about leadership and management, because you told me a lot of your audience are technical people, they're software engineers. Okay, software engineers, I know their education. They've had enough math. They know what a unit vector is. If your audience were a bunch of poets, I would not be using the term unit vector, because they'll look at me and say, what the heck does that mean?
Yeah.
And so even understanding how my audience thinks, what their knowledge is, what their experience is, and how can I communicate in a way that is meaningful to them helps me to be a more effective communicator.
Okay. So basically it comes down to knowing the audience that what you are communicating to.
Well, that's one of about a thousand things.
Yeah. And it makes sense, you know, because sometimes there are very technical people trying to explain something very technical to non-technical folks. And then there is where problems came out or backwards, where non-technical people require something and deliver that requirement to technical people. They don't speak actually the same language, but they try to understand each other. And then is where problems arise because they didn't think about the audience, you know?
And while I talk about communication throughout the book in different ways, in the communication chapter, we get into exactly that, how to recognize the different mental models that different people have and how to communicate into that style.
That's great. And there is other thing that you talk about it, which basically about networking, gathering around with other people around you to build a network. And that's part of your career plan as well. What can you tell about that?
Absolutely. Networking is one of the things everyone knows about, but no one's thought about. No one's thought about how to do it. Now, I get into a lot of concrete tips, how to be a better networker when you're actually trying to do it. But here's an important way to think about it. We now keep our cell phones in our pockets. And the great thing is it means I have access to the internet. The cell phone is almost an extension of me. If you ask me for some fact, what year did the Titanic sink? I don't know, but I'm going to pull out my phone, quickly search and get it. And so I have all this knowledge via my phone. That's an extension of me. I don't have to remember when the Titanic sank. It's at my fingertips when and where I need it. That's great. We're so much more effective because we have this. Think of your network the same way. Too many people think of their network as, well, I need to get a job. I guess I'm supposed to network. But your network are a bunch of people who can do things, who know things. And that gives you access, just like I have the whole internet at my fingertips. My whole network is an extension of me, and it's there to help me solve problems. If I'm trying to figure out an e-commerce thing, I haven't really worked in e-commerce. Maybe I call you and say, hey, I have a question. How should I think about this? Or what software do you recommend? There's someone in my network who probably has the answer, who knows a little more than I do. And by using them as an extension of me, just like I do with my cell phone and the internet, I become so much more effective.
That's interesting. I have a friend that... when you started talk about the phone, that he was, whenever he was talking to you and asking questions, he picked up his phone and put down the answer to those questions. Like, how many kids do you have of it? I have two kids. What are their names? And he put the names and where are their birthdays? And then he remembered all those things because he had it on the phone. And that's a kind of way to... put interest into other people's and also to understand better their lives, you know? And also, as you know, you can have like those details, but also technical details about yourself or more other details, right?
In the book, I talk about the Mackley 66, which is what he was doing. It was created by a man named Harvey Mackley, and he had 66 things that his salespeople had to know about all their customers. Name, birth date, where they worked, standard stuff, spouses' names, kids' names, where they went to school, their religion, their hobbies. Why does this matter? Because you don't want to say Merry Christmas to someone who is Muslim. Instead, you want to wish them an easy fast for Ramadan. You want to know these little things. I had an employee when, after we worked on a big project, I was sending out gift baskets to all the people on my team, just as an extra thank you. hey, thank you for all those extra nights and the hard work. Well, for one of them, I knew he was married. So I sent the gift basket, not just to him, but to him and his wife, because, hey, she gave up some stuff too. She had the extra nights with the kids when he was working. I said, thank you both. I had another who I knew was vegetarian and didn't drink. Well, I sent that married couple, it was a wine and cheese gift basket. That's not what I sent him, because that would have been insulting. Great, I just sent him a wine bottle. He's not going to use it. He says, I don't even know who you are. Instead, I sent him a vegan gift basket, and he really appreciated that. It says, I paid attention to who you are as a person and what matters to you. And so knowing those little things, I have a reference to the lifts, the Mackley 66. I do keep that information on people I meet, not all 66, but I know those little things so I can reach back out, so I can help create that connection and be aware of what matters to you.
That's great advice. And that's something that the salespeople use around, you know, when you are going on vacations, there are these things about, they sell you, you know, this, like, I don't know how to say in English, timeshare or share time on a condo.
Timeshare.
And those guys are very good at it, you know, like very, very, very good. They try to find something where you guys like match, and then they hit with that, and then they use that as a sell strategy, and it, because you just are having something in common, they use it for selling.
Yeah.
That's it. That's interesting.
You can use these techniques even if you're not a salesperson. It is for relationship building. Now, salespeople use it for building a relationship to get a sale, but all of us want relationships even if we don't want sales.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what my friend was doing, like having a better relationship. I know when it's my birthday, he will call me, and it will be a nice thing from his side, because he's aware of my birthday. So yeah, that makes sense about this list. And he's way more experienced than myself, so he should have known about this list before. So, and there is another soft skill about negotiation, because down in your career, there will be times where you need to negotiate. And that's something I believe we should try to make a skill for you. What can you tell me about like some tips for it?
Well, let's talk about the importance of negotiation, because it's sometimes underappreciated. I'm going to use a simple example. Suppose you are 30 years old and you have a job offer. And forgive me, I don't remember the ratio of US dollars to pesos. So I'm going to give you the example in dollars. Suppose you have a job offer for $80,000. But instead of taking the job as is, you learn to negotiate. You read the chapter in my book. You read a different negotiation book, whatever works for you. And so you negotiate and ask for and use the techniques to get $81,000, just $1,000 more. Okay, that's not a big lift. We can all imagine doing that. So you spend 5-10 minutes negotiating on a call or a couple emails back and forth, and go from 80 to 81. If you do nothing else in your career, if you stay there for the next 30 years until you retire, that 1 5-minute of negotiations just got you $1,000 more for 30 years. In 5 minutes, you just earned $30,000. Like, oh my God, that's incredible. But of course, you're saying, there's no way I'm sticking in this job for 30 years. You will have raises, you will have promotions, you will have other jobs. You will negotiate those, and for more than just $1,000. If you learn to negotiate, you can add tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands of dollars to your lifetime earnings. But of course, we're just talking about salary negotiation. Not only do you negotiate for more things when you're taking a job, we negotiate not just when taking a job. We negotiate with partners and customers and suppliers. We negotiate all the time with our coworkers. We're not talking about how to divide up $1,000, but how to do things on a project, or more that my team has to do is less for your team, and that's why you want me to do more, but we want you to do more. How do you negotiate? How do you find a good balance? And being more effective can help to create better relationships, better outcomes. We negotiate with our families, our spouses, our children. Negotiation is going to come into your life on a regular basis, and being better produces better outcomes, not just financially, but in many areas. Now, here's the bigger secret. we can do the math with negotiations. We can say, oh, $1,000, 30 years, here's how it works out. If you become a slightly better leader or communicator or networker, if you get the equivalent of that $1,000, because $1,000, that's not being the world's greatest negotiator. That's just doing a little bit better. If you do a little bit better as a leader or communicator or any of these, no one's going to say, well, here's $1,000 more, but you're going to stand out. You're going to get put on the better projects. You're going to get promoted faster. You're going to stand out in the interview process. Being a little bit better with any of these skills is going to lead to a massive return. With negotiations, we can do the math. We can say $1,000, 30 years, here's how it works out, but it applies to all of these skills. So the key takeaway is with each of these skills, don't worry about being the world's best, just get a little bit better, and it's going to have a massive return on your success in the future.
Yeah, and it will help you to negotiate better. And you can negotiate a lot of things, like when switching a job, like vacation days and other stuff that is not actually money, but it's good that you try to put those things on the table when you are taking a new offer, right?
And I end the chapter with the most common negotiation people ask about, how do I negotiate a job offer? I go through all the things you can negotiate, how to think about it, what they might give on, what they might not give on, as a very tactical, here's how you can apply negotiations to the situation.
That is great, because as you say, some people, they don't negotiate. They say, okay, that's a good number, and that's it. They don't try to get more because they think that's okay. But you can actually get more, because usually companies, what they do, they offer as little as possible to you for saying yes, but they have like this window where they can stretch a little bit more, right? And if you don't ask or you don't negotiate, you are missing those extra dollars, as you say.
If you learn to negotiate right, there's no downside to asking. Worst that happens is they say, okay, this is our final number, take it or leave it. You're no worse off.
Yeah, exactly. And then there is other thing that also is part of your chapters in the book, is about ethics. And ethics is what I can see from my point of view is about how do you behave on your work based on your values. And I believe this is important for your career. What can you tell me about it?
The ethics chapter, I talk about the complications in our modern world of ethics at work. Now, there are some very obvious things. Don't sexually harass or harass in any way your coworkers. We all know about that, but there are more subtle things we don't always think about. So for example, there's a company that would donate some of its products to a developing nation. So this is to help the people. They don't have as much money as we do. But in doing so, they put out of business the local craftsmen who created those products locally. Should they say, well, this is still good because the net result is more people are helped? Do they owe anything to the local craftsmen who they're putting out of business? There's no right answer. It depends on your values, but these are things we need to think about. Those of us in software, we all know the dangers of data science and what can come out and what happens when there's bad data. There's a famous example from Kathy O'Neill, who wrote the book Weapons of Math Destruction. And she gives the example of there's a practice, an old practice in the US of redlining. This is back when discrimination was more rampant, when banks would literally draw a red line around a neighborhood. And if you were not the right race, you could not get a housing loan. You couldn't get a mortgage to live there. Now, that's completely banned. It was made illegal back in the 60s. And I truly believe, even though racism unfortunately persists in the US, I don't think there's any bank saying, oh, yeah, you know, we're not going to give you a loan because of your race. I don't think they're doing that.
That changed, yeah.
However, what happens is now it's not even humans making the decisions. It's data. We just look at the data. Do you qualify for a loan? Yes or no? And we're looking at a number of scores. One of the things we look at is the zip code you come from. Well, because of these historical practices of redlining, as well as just the history of the US and discrimination we've had, we know zip code, which is a sign of where you live, that has a correlation to your race. And so even though they're not intentionally, they can't even ask what your race is, by using zip code, they can make certain assumptions unintentionally about your race. And so you can get penalized and you can get de facto racism in our algorithms. Not that anyone intended it, but that's what happens because of historical events. What obligation do we have as data scientists, as software engineers, as product managers, to think about this, to incorporate that into our products, or to say we actively have to stop this? So there's a lot of subtleties in what we do, particularly those of us in engineering, those of us working with data, because there's a lot of almost legacy embedded into the data.
That's interesting. As the e-commerce works I work on, there was a requirement about zip codes blacklist. Basically, those zip codes, they were not able to deliver at home because they were dangerous. But I never thought about the ethics about it. You know, we usually just drag and drop the list of zip codes in that data set, and then those zip codes will not be able to receive the goods because for some reason they are kind of dangerous. But what people living there, they don't have nothing to do with that, probably.
Exactly. You want to be fair to your drivers. Boy, you shouldn't put them at risk, and these are high-risk neighborhoods. On the other hand, there might be people there who are not, they themselves aren't threatening. They are stuck there for historical reasons, for losing the birth lottery. They're trying to better themselves, but don't have access to the products. Are you holding them back? Should you be doing something where you say, for people in these zip codes, we have, for example, a weekly drop-off point where you can come and pick it up? Should you be doing those extra, and that will, of course, eat into your margins? Or do you say, once a week we'll do delivery and we have an armed guard with them? Again, eating into your margins. Is that a fair trade-off? There's no easy answer, but these are the questions we need to think about instead of just, oh, why do we even think about them? Let's just do what we do, and not realizing there are some externalities, there are some impacts to some of the decisions we make.
Yo, that's interesting. I never thought about it till now. You know, usually some ethics on your work are not things that you think on the side of software because you're just writing code. Yeah.
The world is complex and it creeps in unexpected ways.
Yeah, exactly. And then I was thinking this book was for people that was just finishing their career, but it is not, because basically what you just mentioned about negotiating is applies for anyone switching careers or switching a job. And it doesn't matter if you are just out of college or if you have like 15 years working, this book is going to help you anyways, right?
If you want to get better at negotiating, networking, leading, communicating, team building, interviewing, working effectively, if you have a future job you want to get and you're not there yet and need a plan, any and all of these skills, ethics as well, if you want to get better, this book can help you. And so it's not just for those right out of school or those in their 20s. We have readers regularly reading in their 30s, 40s, 50s, even some in their 60s. Although time and again, the feedback we get is, I wish I had this 20 years ago.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking when I was reading all these things. Oh, this is a wonderful thing. I'm going to give this to my brother so he have it, and also for myself. And then there is something that I want to ask you. It's not related to your book, but it's something that I learned a few episodes ago. There is a guest that I invited to the podcast, and his name is Robert. And Robert is pushing for a 4 days week, which basically is he thinks that companies, like especially tech companies, can move to a 4 day week instead of a five days week, where you can be as much as productive in 4 days than in 5 days. What do you think about that idea?
I think it's possible. Now, whether or not that can work is going to vary a lot by the culture of the company, the culture of the country. So there's a lot of maybes. There's nothing written in stone about why we have to have a 5 day work week. There's nothing that says a 4 day work week is inherently better. So I know there are experiments. Iceland, as we're recording this, Iceland is working on a really big 4 day work week experiment. The data I've seen on some smaller experiments, it's been mixed, I believe. There's been some successes, sometimes not so much. And so I think it really just depends on the company and culture. Companies are welcome to try it and see what works for them.
Yeah, exactly. And that big experiment is, as you say, just happening. Let's see how it goes, because this is one of the biggest, right, that they have tried. So yeah, and also depends a lot on the countries, because I was telling Rob, and the kind of industry as well, because not all the industries will be suited for that. But in Mexico, there are companies that ask co-workers to work even Saturdays. You know, it's like 6 day work instead of five. So it's kind of also something cultural as well.
Right. We used to have 7 day work weeks, then we went to six, then to five. There's no hard and fast rule about the number we have. Now, 7 day work weeks, I think, are tough. You don't have time to rest. And certainly, we all grew up with 5 day work weeks, or most of us have. I guess some companies do six. So shifting to longer would be very tough. You'll certainly get unhappiness on the part of workers.
Yeah, exactly. And then at the very beginning, I told you I am from Mexico. I speak Spanish, and then you have something to say about learning a second language, because I believe this is a very important skill, a soft skill to have in your career as well. What can you tell me about it?
I think it's certainly helpful, not just because certainly today we work in a more multinational society where we do a lot of work with people from different countries. Studies have shown learning a second language helps your brain develop in certain ways that will expand its thinking and make you more effective. So I'm a big advocate for learning multiple languages. I unfortunately started learning very late. There's some studies that suggest something happens to us during puberty that limits our ability to learn languages. I didn't start learning Hebrew until probably I was about 10 years old. I didn't start learning Spanish until I was almost, I think, 12 or so. So I got started a little late, which is unfortunate. In fact, I remember in Spanish, the words kept changing their endings, all the conjugation, habla, hablamos, hablas. I had no idea why. I didn't know why this was happening. I just kind of memorized it. And years later, I found out it's because English has trivial conjugation. I'm naturally conjugating in English. No one told me it's conjugation. I picked it up as a native speaker. And I never saw the endings really change. So this was confusing. But unfortunately for me, my Spanish, I was mildly, maybe barely conversational at one point at the end of high school, and I've since forgotten it. And my Hebrew never really took in the first place. So one day maybe I'll come back to learning languages, but it's not my strength, but I do think we should encourage, and I know I want my kids to grow up with learning multiple languages in the household.
Yeah, that's yeah, it's a skill for the future. I mean, if I didn't speak English, I will not have this job I have just now. I wasn't going to be able to speak with somebody like you. You know, that's a great thing, having a second language that helps you to like it makes the world a little bit open for you. You can travel because you understand another language. It's going to be easier for you and stuff like that. So
And it's
helps
my
a lot.
limitation that we wouldn't be able to speak. Thankfully, you have stepped up and learned my language, even if my ability to learn yours was pretty hampered.
And then at the end of the podcast, I usually have a list of kind of personal things. And one of the questions is, what is your favorite place to visit or to be in?
I'd say my favorite cities are Copenhagen, Dublin, and Bangkok. So those are three
Cool.
places I love to go, although I also love going back to MIT.
That's great. And I had a lot of questions about MIT because, you know, MIT is very famous because all of the movies talk about MIT, Spider-Man, for example. So when I was telling my kid I was going to interview a teacher of MIT, he was like very happy about it because being at MIT is wonderful, but being a teacher at MIT should be way much better, right?
Did they mention MIT and Spider-Man? Because Peter Parker famously went to NYU. Tony Stark, I believe, is an alum from MIT. I'm sure we have some others as well in the Marvel Comic Universe and some others.
Yeah, I believe it they did on the last movie where they want to
I
go to
haven't seen it
school.
yet.
Yeah,
No
and
spoilers.
they want to sorry for that. And then and there is another question. If you could like give yourself an advice from I don't know, 20 years before, 15 years before, what advice you think you will say to yourself?
Learn these skills. that we talk about in the Career Toolkit. Yeah. I came out of MIT not knowing them. I knew of them. It's not like I never heard the term networking or negotiating. Yeah. But I didn't think it mattered. I always thought, well, I'm an engineer. If I can just solve the problems better and faster than others, well, of course, I'll get jobs, I'll get promotion. Mm-hmm. But that is a narrow view. And in some ways, think of it this way. Again, use an example that will resonate with the audience. Mm-hmm. I'm optimizing along one dimension where I just say, be the best engineer I can be, recognizing that these other skills play into it. I can get a better optimization. In fact, here's one of the ways I open the book. Imagine you have a rectangle that's 4 by 10, and you need to increase one of the sides by 2 units to maximize the area. Which side do you increase, the 4 or the 10? Feel free to pause the podcast if you need to. But of course, I'm sure your audience instantly says, oh, okay, yeah. The answer is go from 4 to 6, 60 units, increase the short side. Okay, why am I bringing this up? Let's think philosophically about what's happening. When you put the 2 units on the short side, those 2 units get amplified by that long side. They become 20 instead of sticking on the long side and only becomes 8. All of us have short sides and long sides. Now, we, especially in engineering, we think we have to keep working on our long side, on our technical abilities. Because of course, the technologies we're using today didn't exist 10 years ago, even 5 years ago. And if we don't keep up with it, I'd be sitting around saying, who wants to program in Fortran? And no one would care. So certainly keep up on the long side, but recognize you get a better ROI on the short side. And to use the example you gave earlier, imagine you are technically very strong, but as you get more senior, you have to spend more time talking with non-technical people and explaining the ideas, explaining the trade-offs. Hey, why are you refactoring the database right now? Database is database. I have to say, well, this is why it's not going to scale. But you can't just give issues about latency. They might not get that. You're going to have to explain it in simpler terms. And so being able to communicate in non-technical ways will make you more effective. And that's working on that short side, your communication skill, and not your long side of, well, I'm just better at refactoring databases. So recognize we have to invest in our short sides as well as our long sides, and doing so will lead to greater success. So I wish I knew that years ago.
Yeah, and that's like something I believe happens to everyone on this kind of industry. We want to be like very good programmers and focus on that hard skill, but sometimes those soft skills are like way more important than we think. Yeah. Okay, and then what people do you believe inspires you to be better? What kind of people or what people in particular do you think inspire you to be better?
Well, certainly right now, President Zelensky, who is exemplifying amazing leadership and a man who shows a commitment to his country, to the people he is responsible for leading, who puts himself and his family at risk to meet his obligations, that's the type of leader we want to see. And so I hope to see more people like that in the future. And those are the type of men and women who I look up to.
Yeah, that's, President Zelensky is a great example of somebody that has courage and leads. That's a great example. And then what about a book recommendation that you can tell me? I have the Career Toolkit on my to-dos, but what about another book? It can be anything, fiction, nonfiction, whatever you think is.
I'll name two. We mentioned before Peopleware by Tom DeMarco and Timothy Lister. I'd also recommend The Charisma Myth by Olivia Fox Caban. But on my website, I know we'll give you that URL in a moment, so stay tuned to the end. There is a resources page where I list about 15 books that I reference in the Career Toolkit to go deeper. And then about another 15 books I don't reference directly, but I recommend because they help me with my overall development. So I've got a list of about 30 different books on the website.
Okay, great. I'm going to take a look about it. And then if you happen to have to listen a song for the rest of your life, what song do you think will that be?
It would be Rhapsody in Blue.
Rhapsody in Blue?
Yes.
From who?
I'm blanking now on the composer. It's classical music.
Okay.
I'm totally blanking on who wrote it.
All right. But it is classical music. I can find it on Spotify very easily.
Yes, you can.
There are many
versions of it, and I don't know if I have yet a favorite version.
I'm going to find it. Good. And then if there is something on TV, like a movie or a TV series that you can recommend me?
Oh, so many. But I'll give one movie and one TV show. The Longest Day is one of my favorite movies. It's a 1950s movie about the D-Day invasion.
Okay.
And for TV show, one of my all-time favorites, and this will particularly resonate, I think, with your audience of engineers, Venture Brothers. It was on Cartoon Network. It is one of my all-time favorite shows, although it probably helps to be my age, to be Gen X, and recognize references to all the 1970s and 80s TV shows.
Great. I haven't seen it. I'm going to take a look about it. And then what about podcasts or YouTube channel that you follow that you can think you can share with me?
I don't know of any particular one, but if you go to my website, which again, mm-hmm. will give you a moment, mm-hmm. I certainly link to the 300 some episodes I've been on. So you can see a whole mm-hmm. bunch of great podcasts there. Mm-hmm. You certainly have good taste in the guests they bring on, and they range from engineering to leadership to HR to personal development, general interest, authors, publishing, so a whole range of different topics.
That's great. I appreciate your time being here because you are very humble to be here with me. Thank you very much, Mark. And is there something that you want to say to the audience, like you know, your website and all something else to wrap up?
So let's give everyone info on where you can get more information, mm-hmm. including all the things I referenced. If you go to my website, thecareertoolkitbook.com, there you can learn more about the book. You can see where to buy it, Amazon, elsewhere. You can follow me on social media or get in touch with me. You can see more of my writing. I put out a weekly article. There's also a free app, the Career Toolkit app, which has highlights from the book, puts them right in your pocket. So if you're about to go into a networking event, pull up those networking tips just when you need them, or use in the passive mode. You only need to open it once a month, but at a time you set each day, it's going to pop up one of the tips. So it helps keep it top of mind. And then there's the resources page where I list those questions for helping think about your career, the Career Toolkit Development Program if you want to upskill your entire team or organization, and of course, references to all the books and a whole bunch of other things, all free. All of this is at thecareertoolkitbook.com. I'll also mention I have another app called Brain Bump. This you can see at Cognosco Media, CognoScoMedia.com. If you go to the Brain Bump link, it's just like the Career Toolkit app, only it has not just content from my book, but other books, other podcasts, other blogs, other classes. It takes the highlights so you can have them in your pocket when you need them, or just passively get reminded about some of the highlights, some of the good things you've heard on podcasts, blogs, and books to help keep it top of mind. So Brain Bump and the Career Toolkit app, both of which are completely free on the Android and iPhone stores.
Great. Thank you very much. I'll get them. And that was it for today. Thanks, guys, for listening. I hope you like it. If you like it, please share with your friends. If you didn't, just share with your enemies. The idea is to share. Thank you very much, and talk to you later.